directed towards your particular enemy. As we know, that Rabbi Meir wanted to have people in his neighborhood that caused him great tzar, apikorsim, and he wanted them to be eliminated. So we know we have a tradition that when the crown of a rooster turns red, that is the moment. So he sat there and he analyzed, he studied with intensity the crown of the rooster's head, and he fell asleep. And then he realized he did not have this. Hashem did not want him to curse, to take advantage of that moment in time. Yitamu chato'im.
Ruria told.
Right, his wife told him. Yitamu chato'im v'loy choytim. So when you learn that, and when you learn that Maimon Chazal, you get the impression that it says in the pasuk Kel zoyim b'chol yoyim. Every single day, there's a moment in time during the day when Mishra gets angry. But that's not the Shudishol Mikra, at least not according to the Mitzudas David. Because according to the Mitzudas David, it's referring back to the beginning of the pasuk. Hashem, He judges the tzaddik, and the tzaddik is innocent. Thus, Hashem gets angry every day at the people that cause the tzaddik unjust harm. Mikel Zayim B'chol Yoyim has nothing to do, according to the Shudishol Mikra, with this principle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry every single day and he directs anger towards the world every single day. Nothing to do. Zero, zero. That's not what it means. It means that Hashem gets angry at the people who caused the tzaddik harm undeserved. Hashem, He's the one that is the judge of the tzaddik, and don't go bother, start up with the tzaddik. Pasuk, now let's see Rashi, Pasuk Yubeis, Shofet tzaddik, Ato, Mishpait tzaddik, Nusach Acher, tzaddik, Shofet tzaddik, Shofet, Shofet, Shehu tzaddik, Mishpait tzaddik. So, Rashi over here says, Shofet tzaddik, one more time with the Rashi. Shofet tzaddik ato, you, mishpoit tzaddik, Shofet tzaddik, Shofet, a judge, Shehu tzaddik, mishpoit tzaddik. Okay, so we have over here two interpretations of Rashi, which are not like the Mitzudas David. And the question is, who is the subject? When it says the word tzaddik, is the tzaddik referring to an individual who is a tzaddik, as the Mitzudas David said, or according to Rashi, it's not what it means? The word tzaddik refers either to Hashem, it is a title, Hashem hu hatzaddik, or it means that Hashem, it's not a noun, it's not an adjective, it's a verb. Hashem exercises, He judges with the midah, the attribute of tzaddik. Hashem is not corrupt. According to Rashi, there are two translations, Elokim shofet tzaddik, period. Hashem is a God, a judge who is a tzaddik. It's a title of Hashem. And the Meila, the beginning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is a shofet tzaddik, he's a good judge. The Meila, when he exercises mishpat, it's going to be with righteousness. The other interpretation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokim shofet, we're not describing Hashem, we're describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's form of mishpat. His form of mishpat is a mishpat of righteousness. Now, according to that, what did the Mitzudas David say? None of the above. The Mitzudas David says that the tzaddik is a human being in this world, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu judges him. And anyone, Hashem decides if what he does is correct or incorrect, and Hashem rewards him, and Hashem does not tolerate when other people cause this tzaddik harm. The Kelzim Chol Yom, now further in Rashi, but where does it mean that in Rashi, what does it mean again? The Kelzim Chol Yom, Kushiraya Sevaseh HaRishoyim. So this is really fits very much along with the Mamori Chazal. That every single day Kodesh Baruch Hu gets angry by looking at the world. This second half of the Pasuk, indeed according to the Parish of the Rashi, has nothing to do with the first half of the Pasuk. And thus, the famous Mamori Chazal that seemed to indicate that Kodesh Baruch Hu every single day, regardless, just on his own, Hashem is angry because the world is not where it is supposed to be, and a dosage of anger goes forth before Hashem, and if you know where that moment is, a person could manipulate that moment. That is fits very well according to the parish of Rashi, because Rashi learns that it's an independent statement. But to summarize, we have a beautiful pasuk, Mizmor Zayin, pasuk Yubeis, Elokim Shofet Tzaddik V'Kel Zoyein B'Chol Yom. We're limited time, so we only learn the Mitzudas and Rashi. The Mitzudas says Elokim Shofet Tzaddik means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He judges human beings who are in the category of a tzaddik. The tzaddik here is a collective noun. We are putting together all of the tzaddikim who live in this world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He judges them. He looks into their deeds. He looks into their behavior. And if they're righteous, they're rewarded. If they're not righteous, if there's a problem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He judges them. He does not need other people to help Him do this. And thus, other people in this world who cause these tzaddikim harm, Hashem gets angry at them. It's all
right,
one...
If Hashem judges
the tzaddik can be doing things in other lamakim. Let's say the tzaddik be other lachaver is perfect. Let's say the tzaddik has been deficient in his service in other lamakim. So that's between Hashem and the tzaddik. It's no one's business to get involved and to help out Hashem. Oh, you know, tzaddik, you know, you woke up 5 minutes late today. I saw you came, well, you came in the middle of Pesukei Dezimra. So therefore, you know what? I'm going to give you a smack across your face. Excuse me, Hashem, He's the one that judges the tzaddik. Don't mishacharein in Hashem's business. And there are people, though, unfortunately, who decide, no, they know what righteousness is. They're the big boss in this world, and they don't like Jews who are tzaddikim, the amich kulam tzaddikim, and they decide they have to punish us because we're righteous, because they have a different system of righteousness. So Hashem gets angry at those people who feel that they are the authority in this world of who's righteous, who's not righteous. The Mitzudis David learns that the entire pasuk is centering around a human being who is a righteous person. A human being who is a righteous person is judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He exercises din according to His liking. And anyone that interferes and brings harm upon this righteous person will suffer the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says that in this pasuk, there's no mention whatsoever of a righteous human being in this world. That is not what we are discussing. We are discussing HaKadosh Baruch Hu only. Hashem is a judge, according to one interpretation, is a judge who is righteous. Hashem is a righteous judge. There are many different types of judges. There are the Democrat judges, there are the Republican judges, everyone is slanted, and then there are the rhino judges. Right? And what is a Democrat in name only? Is there such a thing? A Dino? I never heard of such a thing before.
No, but they're like me, a
Dairo. A Dairo? What's a Dairo? What's a Dairo?
That's the term I invented. I am a Democrat in registration.
Ooh, look at that. It was Kedai to come today and hear such chidushim. A Democrat, I never knew the acronym. Okay, this whole thing to me of a rhino. A rhino, a Republican.
There's a lot of people that are like me.
I'm also like you. I'm also a registered Democrat. And now I know what I am. I'm a Democrat in registration, a Dairo. A Democrat in registration only. Okay, then there's a rhino. And then there is a then there's a Republican, a Democrat. So you know when it comes to judges, you always hear in the news. It's like really funny. It's really funny. The judge issued a verdict.
There's also a Gino, a Jew in name only.
Ooh, that's a real acronym. Yeah,
I've heard that. Yeah, like,
a Gino.
They call that a cardiac Jew. I'm a Jewish in my heart.
Oh, kind of a cardiac Jew.
Yeah, that's
cardiac.
I know, but it's still very applicable.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Learn new vocabulary here. Come over here.
May I ask
of course.
In this. A group of psukim, there are three times tzaddik. It says udechonen tzaddik, and then bochem libod uchvayot elokim tzaddik, and then elokim shofet tzaddik. So it means, it seems to me that the first two talk about tzaddik, the human being tzaddik, and the last one, the third one is elokim Tzaddik, Hakavanah Ben Tzedek, or something, whatever I would want to say, because there are three times here. And because David says that, I'm sure that you deal well with the Tzaddikim, two times, because you are
Matzah min esminai.
I'm talking about the context
between
here and there.
No. Matzah min esminai. Very good. Very, very, very good. Very good. Elokim shah. Very good. So we have over here, according to Rashi says that the word tzaddik is not referring to a human being. It is either referring, it is a description of Hashem. Hashem is a tzaddik, or it means, we're not describing Hashem. We're just saying that Hashem's form of mishpat, Hashem is beyond description. Hashem's form of mishpat is tzedek. Can I tell you, in this world we live in, it's very, very funny. Every time there's a decision handed down, so they always will tell you if the judge is a Republican or a Democrat. That is corruption at its best. In this country, if when a judge makes a decision, the decision, it has to be part of his name, the mahus of who the judge is he a Republican or is he a Democrat? Which means that, of course, you should expect that his decision is slanted. It's sheker. It's not NS. It's all based upon party line.
I mean, it's not necessarily, always the case.
No, so then, when it's not the case, when it's not according to party line...
But because the media jumps on that, it immediately looks for the uniform, But it doesn't mean necessarily that decisions are true to the person who appointed them.
It's right. So then they're criticized. Like, wow, what a mistake. Trump appointed this person, and look, and she betrayed him. She betrayed him. Because it's expected that when you appoint a judge, it's not a matter of the law.
Appointed, but, supposedly the principles they espoused up to that point.
So it's a very, very frightening thing. You look in the Nevi'im, when the Yerushalayim was destroyed, of Shavas Chazon, it's all about corrupt judges. Corrupt mishpat. When a person is wronged, there's nowhere to turn. There's no one that's going to seek justice. And we're mamish, we're living in a country. It was never like this before. We're people, we're the whole system of mishpat. You get this sense. It's just like there's a lack of mishpat. It's all party line. It's all who is in charge, and you say the wrong thing, you're finished, and there's no opportunity to present a case where a person can feel satisfied that I have presented my arguments to a court of law who is objective and impartial and can tell me if I'm right or wrong. No.
Who follows the law?
And then, right, the DOJ. So that's another corruption, an incredible corruption. It's a very, very frightening. We've never seen something like this, at least not in my lifetime. Such, and you look at the Nevi'im, when the Churban came to the Beis HaMikdash, that was the problem. The problem is mishpat. There's no mishpat, pure corruption. It's extremely frightening. Hashem is a shofet tzaddik. He is the tzaddik. You can feel comfortable. You got a fair trial. It's fair and square. His approach to mishpat is tzaddik. And Hashem gets angry every day at the wicked people who don't have that sense of tzedek. Tzedek doesn't mean tzedakah. It means the right thing. It means fair, a fair trial. They say in the Kabbalah Svarim that when a person achamei ve'eshem goes to Shemayim and he's judged, who is he judged by? Who are the dayanim that sit on his mishpat? It is the leaders of his own generation, because only the people of your own generation can understand where you are coming from. They have an appreciation of what the nisyonos are. If you go to a judge, go to a person who lived 1,000 years ago, they really can understand smartphones, computers, the internet. They can understand all the different nisyonos that we have today. Yeah, you'll describe it to them from today till tomorrow. You'll tell them exactly what the issues are. They can understand. It's not shayach. We all understand. It's not shayach. You have to be in it to win it. And the people who you relate to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the most like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kol yachol. There's no one that is more knowledgeable of exactly the nature of the difficulties that we face and the nisyonos to give us a fair trial other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Gimel, ki lo yoshuv chavo yil toish, Hashem does not restore his hand, his sword to sharpen it. The word yil toish, if you look in the Mitzvot Tzion, yichadeit kimo lotesh kol choresh. To sharpen all people who plow. People who plow in the fields, you need to have, the plow has to be sharp in order for it to penetrate into the ground. So it says Hashem does not return his sword yiltosh. Kashtoi dorach vayichonecha. Hashem bends his bow and he establishes it. Now what does that mean exactly? Look at the Mitzvot David first. Pasuk says, ki lo im lo im. I'm sorry, I said im lo yoshuv chabo yiltosh. Im haroidev es hatzadik lo yoshuv. If the roidev, the pursuer, if he does not go back, lo yoshuv im haroidev es hatzadik lo yoshuv midarkoi ki oid yichadeit charboi v'kashdoi asher. But he continues. So he's adding over here some words into the pasuk according to the Mitzvot David. This pasuk obviously cannot be translated literally according to the Mitzvot David. He adds in the word ki oid. He continues to sharpen his sword. In other words, he continues to plot and plan to eliminate the tzaddik. And the bow, which he has bent, mechina, he establishes lirois, to shoot bow al hatzadik, on the tzadik. Now the word dorach is because in ancient times it's not like a lag ba'omer with little kids, and they buy it from the 99-cent store. It's no longer 99 cents anymore. Now it's $1.24. The $1.24 store. Inflation. 7-8% inflation in this country.
Well, then the Dollar Tree went up to $1.
Dollar what?
Dollar Tree, that store, I always laugh because it looks like on the sign where they have the dollar sign before the word Dollar Tree, so it looks like idolatry. But it went up to $1.25.
Yeah, $1.25. So it used to be that, you know, the bows and arrows holding your hand, a bow and arrow. Probably in the movies they show a bow and arrow with your hands. That's not the way the professionals shoot bows and arrows. They step on it. They put it on the ground. They launch it. Well,
they don't do that
in the good movies. In the good movies, they still do it.
If you see the Olympics, they don't do that anymore. I was archery instructor at camp at one point. You learn how to strike a bow. You got to put it over 1 foot and bend it because it's, you know, there's a way to bend it.
Not today.
It's very hard. That's the way you still do it. You're not talking about a crossbow. But no. The point is, it's very hard to do, but you're not going to, the regular way to shoot a bow and arrow is not, only if, you're only doing it from the floor when you don't have an actual target, you're just shooting it in a group, and you want to get distance, so you're pulling it back as far as you can, you need your foot with more strength.
So that's what we're referring to over here.
Let's say within 100 yards, or something like that, you're shooting it with your hands.
Okay.
But
so,
we're talking about justice. The person who attacked a Lubavitcher Chassid on a Shabbos in Crown Heights in 2018 was just sentenced to 11 years.
Right.
I bring it up because I was on that grand jury that indicted him.
Wow.
Wow.
So is that a fair sentence in your opinion?
The main reason for the indictment was the jury was swayed by two black witnesses who came to his defense and basically saved his life.
What was the defense?
Otherwise they might not have believed him.
What was the defense?
No, the defense of the...
He had the trial.
Anti-Semitism.
I just read that this morning. I'm just saying, it's the first of the 60-plus cases that I served on. The first time I've heard something come of it, and that was from 2018.
Who was the judge, you know?
You get these crazy, you know, like that. I was on a jury with a guy who committed a murder, He claimed self-defense, and what? Unfortunately, the guy said, "Yeah, but you hit him five times with the shot of five times in the back." Well, how does that work for self-defense?
That's how it works. That's how it works. That's exactly how it works. And that's how they're trained. You know. That's how they're trained. That's how they're trained.
Five times in the back.
The problem is everything today is on video. People don't understand that's how they're trained.
Yeah, they had the video.
They train the person to keep on shooting until the person stops moving. And you're supposed to shoot to kill. You don't go shooting
right.
The leg and the armor. Otherwise he'll kill you. He'll kill you. People don't understand that. They watch the videos and they don't understand what it's like, the terror and the moment, what it's like. Mm-hmm. It's very, very sad. But okay, in any event, over here, going back over here to our discussion over here, the Mitzvah stuff is coming, they said the word Dorach. Now, I hear what you're saying, but it appears that there are different types of bows and arrows. I am not familiar with all these weapons, but there are certain types of bows and arrows which are very, very large. As you said, the goal is this long distance. It's a long distance trajectory.
You're into a whole group of people. And
you have many people together. And the goal is you have, like, let's say, 100 people all at the same time shooting arrows very, very far away.
That's why you see the defense when the people are on the other side. They crouch close together and hold their shields
on. Not hit by the arrows.
Yeah, because they're not aimed at a particular person.
Right,
because
you can't
just, be
right. Or maybe they had certain precision. They had certain chokhmah that we're not aware of. But there were many, many people together. I once saw a video on this, how they showed how they did archery in ancient times. They showed basically they had hundreds, if not even thousands, of soldiers at the same exact moment in time, shooting like mountain precision,
mm-hmm.
and they all did it by like on the ground.
Right.
They with an incredible force. They stood with both feet on the what's called the what's the string part of the on the bow is the bow, and but then there's the part that the string. What is that called?
The bowstring.
Yeah. So they stepped on it, and they used their arm even backwards with enormous force.
They're trying to figure out. They took one of those old bows and they asked somebody to pull it back. You what you call a pound pull.
Yeah.
So the average person, you get 50 pound pull up to 75. But the bows that they used, they asked the person to pull it back, and they couldn't move the string. And they couldn't imagine how people used to shoot an arrow. How strong were they? That they don't get it. They
yeah.
couldn't do it. So they had to go back to this idea that they're using their feet to load the arrow.
And so what's the video? You probably find it on YouTube.
You're not going to get any, an exact target because you don't have that kind
well, we
of
don't
precision.
Know. We don't know. We don't know the chachma. You know, it could be they spent
their
whole day on
they
this.
Don't know. They don't know how they build chariots. It took them months to build one. How did they make so many? They try to make the wheels, they couldn't do it.
There were certain mercenaries that this was their expertise.
Right.
And like certain nations, their expertise was archery. Other nations, their expertise was sword, fighting with the sword. Other nations, every nation had an expertise.
Feedback. You see,
every nation had expertise in a certain type of warfare, and every battle was unique, and we know that these big world powers would hire them. We're going now to fight this nation, and what we need in this is guerrilla warfare. Who in the world are the experts in guerrilla warfare? And they hire them. It was on order. You go online and you order you need fans? You want to make a concert? You need fans? You go hire fans. You need followers on Facebook. You buy them. Everything is up for sale. Like even today, who makes today the best drones? I read an article not that long ago. Who today makes the best drones? You'd be shocked. The best drones are made by Turkey. They make the best drones. Everyone is going to Turkey. I don't know why. I have some technology that no one knows about. So it seems like who makes the best tanks? The Israelis. Who makes the best fighter jets? The Americans. Okay, and who makes the best submarines? The Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Every nation. So what's the big chachma? The United States can't make a submarine like the Germans. They can't make drones like the Turks.
Mm-hmm.
What's the big deal? Can't make a tank like the Israelis? Obviously, there's some hashgacha practice that the Israelis know how to make tanks. And they have some technology. I don't know. To me, it's very bizarre.
They had to adapt it to desert fighting.
And of course, it has to be adapted. It has to be customized.
They got bogged down in the sand.
Now the Russians have this new type of technology. Not the Russians, the Chinese. Hypersonic.
Hypersonic.
The Americans are caught by surprise.
Right.
Everyone has their uniques. I remember learning, there was a whole list of nations. We learned this once upon a time. There was a list of different nations. And one of the Farshim is, because they're the best in archery. And they have the best horses. And they have the best fighting with the sword. Every nation has their unique koyach. Here and when it came to battles in ancient times, it's very clear they were hired. One nation didn't have everything. The Nebuchadnezzar, he hired mercenaries. He hired many different nations to come to participate in the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. He took first of all this Babel, and there is the Kastim. The Babylonians, they were the more sophisticated. The more sophisticated people, and the Kastim were barbarians. They were barbarians, the Kastim. And he hired the Kastim to help them in the Muhammad. And then we know that Ammon and Moab, they came into the Beis HaMikdash during the time of the Churban was the Bais Rish, the Bais, I don't remember which one it was. There'll be the Romans, they came in and they ripped out the Torah. The only thing they wanted when they got in is they wanted the Torah where it says, Lo Yavai. What is Ammon and Moav doing at the Churban Bais? If it was the Bais Rishon, it's only the Babylonians. If it's the Bais Sheni, it's only the Romans. What are they doing there? The answer is because they were hired. And it says that. They were hired. They were hired by the powers to whoever they were, because they could not do it on their own. They needed specialists. Here it talks about the bow. Rand Mzutovir says Dorach. Okay, I don't know the deals, but this is an idea which comes from many times. The word Dorach.
By the way, historically, this is exactly what happened. Question is always historically, how did the Japanese get into World War II? What was their stake in it?
Yeah.
They wanted to take over China. That
was
their
goal.
Right. So they went ahead and they made friends with the British, because the British have the best navy. They made friends with the Germans, because the Germans had the best ground troops. The standing army was German, was the elite, and British had the navy. And they went ahead and they scouted both countries. They hired mercenaries to get their navy going and get their army going. And that's the way they put together an army.
That's happening over here now. Now there are certain nations, now because the United States is very, very weak, there are certain nations that is very fascinating, geopolitics, how certain nations have always been separated from one another. And the United States made sure of that. That certain nations should not have peace between them. And it was a wedge between them,
right?
Because if they would come together, they would pool their resources. They're lethal. It'd be totally lethal. And now, I think Russia and China, that's one of the examples. Russia and China, if they would pool their resources together, it would be lethal to the world. So until now, the United States always made sure that the two were separate. They kept them apart. But now America's...
Well, they have enough for the thing that really prevents anything. The railroad tracks from Russia to China are different width, so when you
different
get to the Chinese border, the train can't go into Russia and the Russian train can't go into China, because it's a wider track in Russia than in China, and the train would fall off the track from either country. It wouldn't make it.
Okay, I'm sure that's not the only issue. There are other matters of trade. All right, let's learn. Let's go further. So here we have this idea. In ancient times, the word dorach, you always have the expression dorach. Dorach literally means to tread, means to step. And we have to remember that when you pull the bow and arrow, you pull the bow and arrow by stepping, putting your both feet on it, and applying your entire, even you bend backwards. It's like you do like a somersault, like in the Olympics. You go, they showed the image, I remember seeing, was the person was bent upside down, with enormous, his feet were on one side, or maybe they didn't step. Maybe they did it like lying down. They were like in a fetal position almost. They were lying down and they pushed with their foot against the string, and they held the bow in one ear, in one in their hands, in order to maximize the force of the bow and the string to shoot the arrow as far as possible. So you're using your foot, and the foot is the main component, the main pressure that is being applied to power the arrow, and that's why it's called dorach. Dorach. So here it says over here, im lo yashuv, the mitzvah stuff, it says, if the roidef, the rasha, does not call it quits, he does not retreat, charboi, but if he does not retreat, but now here's what the mitzvah stuff is doing, but instead of retreating, he's eating in all these words, charboi yiltoish, he continues to sharpen his sword, waiting, yearning, when will he be able to go out to war and kill? Kashdoi Dorach, he continues to pull, to tread upon his keshes, vayechoyin neho, and to establish this. And that's another interesting word regarding a weapon. Like today with a gun, I'm not sure with all the time. I don't have any guns, Baruch Hashem.
No, it's a kavanah. It's aiming.
Aiming, ah. Aiming. Oh, very good. So what does it mean, aiming? Very good. Look at the mitzvah started. Allah tzadik.
Yeah. Darach is to prepare it in order to shoot. And then, like we did in
to aim.
The weapon also. I had an Uzi, and I had to prepare it before I shot.
So you have to prepare it, and then you have to aim it. There are two things. You have to prepare it, and then you have to aim it.
Before you aim, you have to be ready.
See, I was thinking about today in the modern weapons, you have to arm the weapon. It's not enough to set the target. You make all the preparations, you have your target, but if you press the button, nothing's going to happen. You have to do something else to arm it. Just you have to load the ammunition. It's not even loading the ammunition. You have to actually, there's another safety measure, and at least today's weapons, where you have to then arm it. It's loaded, it's ready to go, but it's still not going to work until...
And
missiles, you have that. Even my guns, they were talking about this actor who killed this camera woman.
For example, you have to arm the missile. I guess it's a safety feature.
Yes, that's what it sounds like. They had this actor who killed this camera woman they were talking about. Yeah. So there they were talking about, what is going on over here? How could it possibly be something like this happen? No. There are so many safety features in the weapon. There's so many What?
Yeah.
Says he didn't shoot.
He didn't shoot. Yeah, right. She's dead. The proof is in the blood.
Guns kill people. No, but there were supposed to be protocols. You know,
safety measures.
In other words, the missile launch systems are. It has to be turned by two people simultaneously, at a certain distance apart.
We should try.
One person and one person. They turn it separately. So they had another, it was on Jeopardy, so there was one of the contestants who went to check this. He said he asked them, he was a very tall guy and he had a tremendous wingspan. And he went in there where because he was a scientist, they let him in and they showed him exactly how the missiles are launched.
Yeah.
He said, he showed them, I could reach both.
Both.
Yeah.
So I was eschato, I am a masker hayom, I remember.
I could reach both, so what
do you think? I remember when I was a kid, I saw a movie just like this. They had to go turn at the same time, and they showed, I think it was Richard Pryor. He showed the guy, like he went in, the guy was to kill the guy, so he tied a string, a rope to the guy's hand, attached to the key, and he was in the other room, other side, and as he turned it, he pulled the rope, artificially have the guy turn the key. I can't imagine today they'd still do that. Today, everything has changed. Today, it's an electronic world. I'm sure today the whole system of how they launch the nukes and all these things is totally, totally different today. All of these. I even once heard an interview. I don't remember from someone from who works in these. He says, it's not like it is in the movies. When you see in the movies two keys and this that. It says that's ancient.
But they have launch codes.
Right. So there are techniques that they have to make sure that it's authentic and this and that. They once did a study. I don't remember. You bring back these memories. They once did a study where they actually faked out the people sitting in these bunkers who are in charge of launching the nuclear missiles, and they sent them all and they disassembled the whole system that when they launch nothing's going to happen. And they sent them the codes to launch the missiles. And they were terrified. And most of the people who sat in these bunkers didn't do it. They actually sent, they came, actually have some guy sitting in, that's his job, it's the whole day, what a boring job, sits there in the bunker, waiting to launch nuclear missiles. And then all of a sudden, the red lights go off, ding, 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 ding. And then they go through all the whole checklist to make sure it's authentic. The President of the United States. And after everything is said and done, they didn't do it. They couldn't do it. They couldn't destroy the world. But they got everything. It was a test. And they realized that the people sitting in these rooms, even if they're very well trained and they're very loyal to the country, you can't trust them. Because the pachad of launching nuclear missiles is so great, no one's going to want to do it. People can't know, they're scared. So they had to come up with a new system, a whole new, I remember hearing an interview like this, a whole new system of how this thing works. In any event, here it says in the Pasuk that the Russia over here, he doesn't want to retreat. Instead, Charbo Yiltosh, he sharpens his sword. Kashtoy Dorach, he prepares his bow. Vayichoy Nechos, Rav Kalman over here is saying is he aims it. It's a very interesting translation. He prepares it, he arms it by applying pressure on the string with his foot, and then he aims. He aims exactly where he wants the missile, the arrow, to land. Let's see the Rashi. Rashi pasik yod gimel im lo yashuv harasha mirishai charba yiltoish hakadosh baruch hu will sharpen his sword, the Yidrich Kashtai. So Lefi Rashi disagrees with the Ungulus. Hashem will punish this Rasha who refuses to stand down, and Hashem will sharpen his sword against the Rasha. Im lo yashuv, if the Rasha will not do teshuva, then what will happen? Hashem charboi, with the capital Ches. Hashem's cheref will be sharpened, Yiltosh will be sharpened against the Rasha. Kashtoidur, Hashem will bend his bow, vayichoynenecha, and aim it against the Rasha. Pasuk Yudalit, v'loy heichin klei moves. So we have to understand who is the subject. Upon him, did he prepare utensils of death? Chitzav, let's see, I'll depend on Rashi and the Mitzudas, possibly. Chitzav, Lidolikim Yifal, his arrows will be aimed at the word Lidol, look in the Mitzudah Sion, Liroitfim, will be aimed as Dolakta Acharoi. Yaakov Avinu said to Lavan, why is it that you have been, that you, Dolakta Acharoi? What does it mean, Dolakta? It means to pursue. Pursue. It's a very interesting word. What is the Shoresh of this word? What exactly is the Shoresh? I don't know. It's a very interesting word. Dolakta Acharoi. You have chased after me. So here we have the word over here as well. And the arrows, Yif'ol means will be shot, will go into motion.
Dolakta is a fire.
He's saying Dolakta is of saying Dolakta. So, of Mordechai. Beanstalk, like Jack and the Beanstalk. Doctor of Mordechai Beanstalk is saying the word doylek means a fire.
Not fire, but to ignite.
Lidlek is to ignite. And to pursue, dolakt acharei means you're on fire. It's the same type of expression. When a person is all worked up, he's all worked up, he's in a frenzy. And he's chasing after a person. He's tzehitzed. Isn't that the word in Yiddish? He's all fired up. He's worked up.
You fire.
Only. That's a modern thing. Only pistols. Only gunpowder. Early today's gunpowder. So that's fire. But arrows is not fire. There's no fire in arrows. That's a modern thing today. So what does it mean? It means that the arrow has been launched because he has been. How come we never have fire drills here? I pass Edward R. Morrow every day, mm-hmm. and every other day there's a fire drill. Mm-hmm. And the young Israel, they don't have fire drills.
It was a bomb threat.
Bomb threat. Every day, a bomb threat in Edward R. Morrow?
One day I saw it the other week.
Well, maybe that was it. Because I see the fire drills every so often near Tarvadas. They also had a public school. And when they had a fire drill, oh boy. Gridlock. They shut down all the streets every other day. A fire drill. Shut down all the kids come out. So they take up the whole neighborhood. Okay. V'loy heichen. So here it says chitzav. Oh, thank you. Chitzav ledolkim yifal. The arrows will be targeted yifal against the people that are in hot pursuit of the tzaddik. Sorry?
The people who chase.
Who chase. Now the word yifal here is an amazing word, because as we because the word yifal is you know that is the example that we give for all words. The pay ayin lamed, the pay hapoyal, the ayin hapoyal, the lamed hapoyal. Right, there are three letters. The word poyal, poyal means action, poyal means a pu'ula, an action, and we use this as the dogma. For every single word, when you teach grammar, every single word, not every single, let's assume now for our purposes, 99% or 95% of words have three letters at their root, and then we have the seven binyonim, and there's, words are complicated, okay, too complicated for my little head, okay, and we use this word in to illustrate how to manipulate other words in many different ways. Here we're taking the floor sample. You want to buy the floor sample? Half price. You going to buy a piece of furniture, right? We order this in the catalog. It costs $1,000. But if you want, we'll give you the one right here in the store. The one right here in the store that everyone sat down on, everyone put their germs on, and everyone touched and smelled. We'll give it to you for half price. The floor sample. Okay? I once had a mice. So in my family, they went to buy a desk. Beautiful, beautiful desk. Very fancy desk. And paid full price. And the store delivered, without telling us, the floor sample. And then when my mother went down and saw it, from my mother. That they order from the catalog at full price, and then my mother would never see, because it's going to someone else. And then when my mother actually happened to see it sometime later, that this wasn't from a catalog. They actually deceivingly sent the floor sample. Woo! La Yehudim. Here, that's what's happening in this pasuk over here, Yifal. We're taking the floor sample. The floor sample, and we're using it over here to express action. It will go into motion. The arrow will be shot. The word over here, yifal, means it will be shot against the pursuers. Let's see the mitzvah of pasuk yedalet. V'loy heichin gemul onsho yiyeh. The punishment will be sheheichin klei moves ha'ela al atzmai. So here is the mitzvah that I'm saying, a novel interpretation. V'loy means it's going to backfire. The subject of the pasuk is the Rasha. The Rasha was told to retreat. Let's learn the mitzvah of Lashit HaSoi. The mitzvah said, Rasha, retreat, stand down. If you don't want to retreat, and instead you want to sharpen your weapons, you don't want to retreat, but instead you want to sharpen your weapons and can plan and plot to harm the tzaddik, and you want to bend the bow and take aim at the tzaddik, you know what's going to happen to you, Russia? Veloy. You're going to shoot the weapon, and it will boomerang, and it will come back and kill you. Your weapons will backfire and injure you. Veloy. It will come back upon you. Heichen klei mavis. It will be as if you prepared.
A man prepared them.
The gallows. Excellent. And he's the one that ended up on the gallows. The end will be Veloy. It will come on you, Heichen klei mavis. Chitzav.
There are many examples of Hashem's offense the action of Russia to boomerang upon himself.
Boomerang. Look at the mitzvah. Veloy Heichen gemul onsho yel Heichen klei mavis ha'ela al atzmai. That's what's going to happen. V'hachitzim and the arrows she'asal b'poyel yodav. Ooh. And then he did. Now he's saying, we could be saying a very interesting thing with the word poyal. And the arrows she also bepoal yadav, he nei beemes poal oisam al haroidev, right? It's said alatzmai. Okay, then so the problem is that he put into motion. Let's learn Allah Tzmaiki, who yeh nerag b'chem, he will be the one that will be killed by these things. So the words are v'loy, the end will be, it will be upon him, it will boomerang. It will be that hechin klei moves, chitzav, the arrows, ledolkin yifol. I guess what he's saying over here is the Mitsuda stuff is telling us you have to repeat the words again. Loy hechin. Okay, now the word yif'ol, I translated it to mean to go into motion. That's not what the Mitsuda stuff says. The Mitsuda stuff appears to say the word yif'ol over here means that he fashioned the weapons that he created, he purchased, he fashioned, that he made. Those weapons that he made, the arrows that he made, that Yifo, he purchased, he fashioned, he prepared, Lidol Kim, for the people that he's chasing after, the end will be, you have to repeat the words, Loi Heichin, they will boomerang upon him, and then he will only be harming himself. That's how it appears the Mitsuda stuff is on this pasuk. It's a very sophisticated translation of this pasuk. If not for the Mitsuda stuff, I don't think it's likely a person on his own would come to that conclusion to translate the pasuk in such a way. The previous two psukim were telling, warning the Russia, enough, stand down, don't do this. No, I don't care, I'll do whatever I want, don't tell me what to do, I want to go and harm the tzaddik. And he takes out the weapons, and he prepares them, he aims them, and then he pulls the trigger. Now, Pasuk Yudalit says, you know what's going to happen to the arrow that comes out? It's going to boomerang 180 and come and kill you. Veloy, upon yourself, it will end up being that hechin klei mavis. It will turn out after everything's said and done, that when the arrow kills him, it'll come out and it's as if he prepared the weapons for himself to kill himself. And the chitz of ladol kim yifol, the arrows that he prepared, yifol. No, so that he made, Rashi says that he created for the people that he's trying to chase after, the end's going to be, you have to repeat the words, the meaning of the pasuk, lo hechin. It's going to come back upon him. Okay, that's the Mitzudas. Let's see Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk Yedalit says, v'lo lo rosho hechin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu klei mavis. It's an entirely different interpretation. According to the Rashi, Rashi is going l'shitasei. Because according to Rashi, when it said back in Pasuk Gimel that yiltoish kashtoi dorach, when it says charbo yiltoish and kashtoi dorach vayichoinenecha, according to Rashi, it refers to Hashem. Hashem is the subject of the previous Pasuk. Hashem is angry at the Rasha. And Hashem now is sharpening Hashem's sword to target the Rasha. And Hashem is going to bend his bow and aim it at the Rasha. And we are continuing in that fashion according to Rashi. Rashi is Lefi Shitasai. And Rashi says the V'loy L'Rasha Heichin HaKadosh Baruch Hu Klei Moves, Hashem prepared weapons L'Dolkim L'Roifim K'moy Dolat Achara, the same thing as the Mitzvah Stavid V'chein Peirushoi. And this is what it means. Now he goes to explain the chitzav, laharoig es horishoyim. The arrows of Hashem are now going to be aimed to kill the Rasha. Hadolkim, who are the rishoyim? The rishoyim are those who are pursuing the tzadikim. Hadolkim es tzadikim. Yifol, the subject of Yifol is Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring it forth. The Yazminein Lahamisem, Hashem will prepare and these arrows, his arrows, and his sword to execute the wicked. Called the legal Lashon Redifohi. So let's go back and translate the two psukim together according to Rashi. Lefi Rashi, back in Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, Imlo Yoshov, if you, the Rasha, do not stand down and obey the order, the command of Hashem, do you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is Charbo Yiltoish. Hashem will take out his sword and Hashem will sharpen his sword. Hashem Kashto Dorach Vayichayinecha. Hashem will bend his bow and aim it at you, the Rasha. The Loi, and you, against you, you are the target, the Rasha. Hechin Klei Moves. Did Hashem prepare his weapons of destruction? Chitzav, the arrows of Hashem, Lidolkim, are targeted and aimed and are launched against the people, the wicked who pursue the righteous, Yifol, are going to go into motion to take out these wicked people who are targeting and pursuing the tzaddikim. Okay, that's Rashi. Now we go to the next one. Pasuk Tazayin, Hine.
Rashi continues Pasuk Yudbet.
Pasuk.
Until Shofet Tzadik, they say Zohem before Yudbet, therefore he punishes those.
Oh, the Rashi, right. It goes back to Pasuk Yudbet as well, right? I only started from Pasuk Yudbet, but it goes back to Yudbet as well. Correct. Pasuk Tezvav.
Should not connect this.
Right, totally separate. Totally separate, right, correct. The next one, according to the Mesudas, the connection starts with Pasuk Yud Gimel and Yud Al, but not Pasuk Yud Beis. Now we go to Pasuk Tezvav. Hine, behold, Yichabel Oven, V'horo Omol V'yolad Shoker. A person, Yichabel Oven, the word Yichabel here means the birth pangs. The birth pangs of birth. We're borrowing from the terminology. David in his poetry, in his command of the language, is taking three words from the process of laid of birth. There is three words. The chevel, which are the birth pangs. Then there is hora, the pregnancy. And then there is laid. Now there's a problem here, the birth. Problem is out of order. It is out of order. The hora should be first, then should be the Chevle Leda, which culminates in the actual Leda. So it's out of order, right? It's out of order. Well, why is it out of order? So this can open up a world of commentary of why it's out of order. Now, obviously, the simple understanding is don't ever hold up a pasuk in Nach as being out of order. That's the easiest way out. The easiest way out is there's no seder. We do that all the time here. A pasuk is a puzzle. It's a puzzle. Take the words and you have to rearrange them. That would be a very nice exercise in an elementary school to take a pasuk, put one word on a piece of paper and give out the whole pasuk and tell the students on their desk to arrange the words of the pasuk in order that it makes sense. To illustrate that in Nach, words are not meant to be read sequentially. In the English department, in the Limud Eichol, then everything has to go in order. But in Lashon Kodesh, it's not meant to be like that. And that is the richness of Tanakh, that words are not meant to be in order. So that's the easy way out. We have over here three different expressions. Hine Yechabel Oven. A person is in the, he's going through the pangs of labor, of oven of iniquity, the horo omo. He's pregnant with omol is another word for oven. I don't know the difference. They're two words which mean the same thing in my limited vocabulary. Wrongdoing, evil wrongdoing, sin, harm, the yolad, and it gives birth to shoker, to falsehood. Falsehood. It's interesting. Falsehood is the result of evil. People, it's a very, very profound, deep pasuk. How do you differentiate, you as the average person, differentiate for me the difference between sheker and evil? So if you would ask me, I would say, I don't know, they're two different things. Wrongdoing evil results in sheker. Sheker is the goal. Is the end. Sheker is worse. A society or a person that is sheker is the pits. That's everything is sheker. How do you get there? You just wake up in the morning, oh, sheker. There are people that are good, honest people. How did they turn into shakranim? When you engage in illegal activity, that grows, develops, and then mushrooms into a result, into a product. There's a chemical reaction. And the product of ovel and omol is sheker. Sheker is the goal. Sheker is the result. Now, what does that mean as well? The opposite, zeh l'umazeh bor elokim. Emes. Emes is not, a person is not born with the meat of emes. A person has to work to come to emes. Leda is the end. There is first pregnancy, then there is a process, a painful process. Pregnancy for most people is not easy. What I understand, it's not an easy process. It's a very painful, difficult process. Chevle is certainly at the end. The tsar chevle leda. But even in the beginning, they say that in the beginning, the early stages of pregnancy for some can be even worse than the end of pregnancy. The middle of the pregnancy, they say, is where it gets a little bit easier. Is that correct? The beginning of pregnancy, the first trimester is extremely, extremely difficult.
You get the morning sleep,
right.
And then once you get through the first trimester, then hopefully it's smooth sailing until the end. And then the end, it's torture, right? The end is the tsar chevle leda, but the beginning is no picnic. So there's a process. A person is not born with the midah of emes. A person has to go through a process. Who do you find this? By the avos. Who is the midah of emes? Yaakov. Yaakov is the product of Avraham and Yitzchak. Avraham is chesed the Avraham. And
go, it's the end of Micha, the last pasuk. It doesn't say Yitzchak because there was no nechama for Yitzchak because Esav never did tshuva. That's why it skips Yitzchak.
Avraham is chesed, Yitzchak is gevura, and Yaakov is emes. So therefore you see that emes does not come instantly. Emes is the result of a process. Zeh lu'uma zeh, corresponding to what it says over here, that v'yolad shoker, sheker is the result of a process of amol and oven. Okay, so it's a very interesting, you hear sheker and emes, you're dealing over here with the end of a process, a long process, to come to a result. Let's look at the mitzvahs of it. These very fascinating pasuk tezvav and pasuk tezvav. Hinei in the mitzvahs of it, yichabel oven kemocho isha asher mimasha yesh lechevle leida hadavar ahi ba'atzma harasa. That matter, hadavar hahi be'atzma harasa ve'osa teilet. The woman, see, Rash, the Mitzudah Stavit is here coming to explain the order. He's obviously, the Mitzudah Stavit is bothered very much by the order. Why is it that we start off with a chevle leida, and then we go backwards, and then we go forwards? Why is it in this order? Why is this order? Do we follow? So he's saying, so he gives us an hesber. A woman right now, think about this. A woman right now, she's in a matzav of enormous chevle leida, pain. She says to herself, how did I get here? How did this happen to me? Oh, I got pregnant. But at least I can hope that it'll come to an end. There'll be a leida that will result in a mazel tov. The time when a woman reflects most upon a pregnancy is the moment of the tsar chevle leida. That's the moment. That's the pivotal moment. In fact, Chazal said the woman has to bring a karbon, because many women, when they're karas leleid, the tsar chevle leida is so enormous, they take an oath.
They'll never have to do it again.
So after, they'll be with their husband again. Forget about having a child. They'll never do this again.
Right.
And therefore, they have to be basically bring a carbon. They have to be mechaper for a shvua shav.
Right.
At least in their minds. Although they may not have made it bepeh, but in their minds, the intensity was so great. So that's exactly how the Mitzvah stuff comes to answer the order of this pasuk. The woman right now wakes up one day and is in enormous pain. And she says to herself, how did I get here? Oh, I got pregnant. Is there any hope, any solution? Yeah, the solution is give birth. Give birth. That's what it says. Look at the words in the Mishnah of it. Kimayho isha, asher, mima sheyesh lo chevle leida. This, now that she suffers with chevle leida, hadover ahi be'atzma, she realizes that this matter, she brought it upon herself. Be'atzma, she herself, harasa, She brought upon herself this problem by becoming pregnant, but there is a solution. The solution will be, the end will be, the pain will go away when she will give birth. For Oisa, this fetus inside that will come out, Taylor will take away the tsar. Kain harashoyim, halalu, hinei, ma'asehem haroim lo bihizdamein asoom. When the rishoyim, their evil deeds, it didn't loy bihizdamein asoom ki im choshu alei mitchilu la'asayisam. It was premeditated. It didn't just come their way. Bihizdamein means like, in this context, by chance. It didn't just, you know, he's out of nowhere. It was premeditated. Premeditated. They planned for years how to pull this over our heads. Ki im choshu alei mitchilu la'asayisam. Uvadavar hazeh atzmo, and it will result in their churban. Uvadavar hazeh gumul tashlumehoin, and they'll get what they deserve when this thing comes about, when the punishment comes upon them entirely. I want to welcome back Ezra Fried. Ezra Fried over here, he's online. He just got up from Shiva this morning. And Hashem should give you nechama, should give you and your family nechama. Ezra Fried was very, very loyal to his mother. The last tekufa, he was constantly, continuously by her side and taking care of her in a very special way. It's a very big schus, kibud aim, and that schus should be with you your whole life. Bracha of Laman Yarichun Yomecha Ulaman Yitav Loch Varachta Yamin. Okay, let's go further. We have over here the words in the Rashi. Now we have Rashi. Yechabel l'shoin heiroyoin v'leida. So here Rashi obviously is troubled with the same issues. The order is incorrect. So Rashi says the word yechabel does not mean chevle leida. The word yechabel, it means the process of reproduction. It's the whole process. He's coming to disagree. And it's called a chabola. Why? L'shoin heiroyoin, pregnancy, v'leida, kamo shama. Wow, what a great pasuk. There your mother gave birth. The way they translate this in art scroll, if I'm not mistaken, is Shama there. I always wondered about this word. It bothered me, I never really paid much attention. There your mother gave birth to you. If I'm not mistaken, that's what sticks in my mind from the art scroll translation. There, in the desert, your mother gave birth to you. What? Since when does the word chiblatscha mean gave birth to you? So I never thought about it. I never paid much. Even though we learned this once upon a time. We learned in the shir here. We learned shir here once upon a time. Time to learn it again. And it says, chiblatscha, Rashi over here says, the word chiblatscha is a generic term that covers the entire period of reproduction from beginning to end. It includes the pregnancy. It includes the chelelada. It includes the birth. It is the entire tekufa of birth. And that's what it's been used of, hine yechabel oven. So Rashi learns that there's first a generic overview of the process. An overview of the process, hine, behold, yechabel oven, there is a birth of iniquity. So oven, that means a general description which includes within it, I guess, Sheker and Omol. Let there be a very big nafkamina between the Mitzudas and Rashi as to understand what is Sheker. Is Sheker a result, as we said until now? Or maybe Sheker is just one of the pieces of the process. And then Rashi says, it's a general, and in that general overview, we have two parts. We have Omol and we have Leda. The horror amal, the yolat shaker, kol mashu mailid, the yogea hakol mishaker bo. So he learns as follows: everything which this person produces and toils, hakol mishaker bo, she'enay miskayen biyodai. It does not, there's no endurance. Masla omar, okay, this is the name of a person. Masla of a person, kol ma de shikra mailid, pechasa nospa. Everything that sheker gives birth, pechasa, destruction, naspa takes. Naspa, I think, means acquires. Now I'm going to say, this is an exception of the Gemara. anything that is that, that comes forth in this world from Sheker, Gesundheit, it's given over to the Koyach of Churban. And Churban takes and destroys that item. They say this about money. We always say that a person gives a donation to a cause and the source of the money is illegal activity, stolen money, nothing good's going to come from that money. You go give a donation to a yeshiva of Davidson, Shalom Aleichem. Someone gives a donation to a yeshiva, let's say, of $1,000, or wants to go build a building. You want to put your name. You want to put the name on a building of $1 million. And where did the money come from? The money came from gezel, stolen money. Do you really expect there's going to be siyata d'shmaya in this makom that the children or the people that come to daven are going to succeed? If the shorish of the money is gezel, it's not possible that there's going to be siyata d'shmaya that will come. Maybe for now there'll be a nice ceremony and we'll take nice pictures and it'll be a nice shiny building, but ultimately there's not going to be siyata shmaya when the money comes from illegal activity. Anything that is created through sheker is given over to the koyach of pechasa of destruction. Okay, so we have over here. It comes out over here that we have here a machlokes with Rashi and the Mitzvot as to sheker. Is sheker the result of oven and omol, or is sheker one of two components of oven and omol? According to the Mitzudas David, we have hinei yichabel oven. Yichabel is the overview, the entire process of conceiving, becoming pregnant, you know, developing the pregnancy, ultimately the chevle leida, and then the birth itself. The word is a general overview. In that general overview of what we're calling oven, sin, there are two parts. There is part A called amol. Amol is another word which I don't know the exact difference between the word oven and amol. It means wrongdoing, evil, evil and wrongdoing. And there's another element called sheker. That's how Rashi learns pshat in the pasuk. Rashi obviously was bothered. Rashi obviously did not like the approach of the Mitzvot David to say that the word Yechabel means Chevle Leida, because then the Chevle Leida is in the wrong place. The order should be first pregnancy, conceiving, conception, and then there is Chevle Leida, and then there is birth. How come it's out of order? Therefore, Rashi says, I disagree with you. I am of the understanding that we're describing the entire picture overview. And in this big process, there are two parts, pregnancy and leida. We're not going to even discuss the chevle leida. We're just going to discuss the generals. And there are two components. One is called amol, one is called shoker.
I have another explanation here. Hinei Yechabel Aven, period. He plans to do something bad. Chovel, the long Israel Chabriel, it's similar, yeah.
So how are you translating the word? How then are you translating the word?
In the army, there are some people who are Chablani. They are supposed to plan...
terrorists.
And
a terrorist.
So, Yechabel Aven, he plans to do something bad. What is the result? Yechabel is the result, PL. What was the result? Amar v'yalat shaker. The pregnancy was Amal, and then he had a blood checker. So this Yechabel, it's a Chabel, yeah, but that was not what he wanted to say here. He wanted to say what he planned and what the result was. Because the entire planet is like that.
Okay. So you're giving a new translation now. You're giving us a new translation. You're saying the word that Yechavel basically means to plan to do evil.
Yeah.
The plain evil. Okay, that's a different translation. It's a different translation. 100%, I have no problem with it. Because the word mechabel. A mechabel.
Aman v'sheker are the same thing. That's the result.
Okay, right. Okay, you're planning evil, and the result is there's a horror of amal and a leida of sheker. Okay, but we, with that approach, we have to accept that the word of yechabel means to plan to do harm. In Eretz Yisrael, if I'm not mistaken, they refer to a terrorist as a chablanim. A mechabel. Right? So it means to plan to do evil. Okay, 100%. But it's a different interpretation. It's a different interpretation. To plan to do evil and adults. Okay, Rashi is saying the word yechabel means it's an overview of the process of reproduction. And according to the Mitzudois David, he says it means the chevlei leida. And the big issue here, it's out of order, and that's the question, how are we going to reconcile the sequence of words? I want to suggest to you another drush, number four, and that is, Yichabel means the Chevle Leida. The ultimate Chevle Leida is finding a Shirach. and the Chevle Leida comes before the pregnancy and before the birth. Before you can have children and the wife can become pregnant and give birth, you first have to find her. So, or the girl has to find him. So that is the real Chevle Leida. So there's the Chevle Leida, and then there is the Heroyon, and then there is the Leida, and it's in order. It's in order. Okay? That's my drush for the day. We're going to stop here, take a very short break, and I want to talk about Asar B'Teves. Asar B'Teves for a little bit after our very short break. There's only today virtual coffee. We don't have here real coffee. Just like Zoom is a virtual experience, there's virtual coffee.
And you pay it with digital money.
Make-believe money, digital or virtual money. Everything is make-believe. The world of fantasy. Rav David, how are you? Are you okay?
Virtually.